Hi, I'm Janelle.
And I'm Monique.
And welcome to Is Marriage Worth It?
We are just two single chicks, girls, women.
Anything but females.
Trying to figure out what marriage is like and is it worth it?
I'm assuming the best place to get the answers is from married people. Maybe engaged people, newlyweds, and even other singles.
Each episode, we will have a guest answering different questions we have or that you may have about marriage.
Join us as we try to figure out, is marriage worth it?
I wonder if my future husband or yours is listening right now. Hi, I'm Monique.
And I'm Janelle.
And welcome back to another episode of
Is Marriage Worth It?
So our guest today is Amanda. And the way that she became a guest on the show, we're both in a Need a Guest podcast group on Facebook. And for some reason, I was like just scrolling through it. I really don't know why. And I saw that she commented something on somebody's post and I was like, this sounds interesting. So then I went to her website and I was like, oh, this sounds interesting. So I sent her an email and she emailed me back right away. I was like, yeah, gladly accept. So thank you so much, Amanda.
Thank you for having me.
All right. So just to kick things off, can you just tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. My name is Amanda. I am a author, a speaker, a coach, a mom, a wife, and I recently released my first book, my memoir, The Sex Trafficker's Wife, and it shares the story of the worst trauma of my life when my ex-husband in 2016 was arrested for human trafficking. And so I am on a mission to spread awareness, to share my story and help other people feel less alone and seen in their own hardships.
Okay. So, and for our listeners, that is the reason why I brought her on, because she literally, the title of her book, The Sex Trafficker's Wife. And I was like, hold on, how does that even happen? So first of all, how long were you guys married?
We were actually divorced less than a month after our 10-year wedding anniversary, but we split up a few years before that, but we were legally married for 10 years.
Wow. And so how did you guys meet?
So we met, when we were actually working at the same, company when I first had moved to Colorado, and we were actually, he's actually my second husband. He and I were both married previously to other people, and I was separating from my first husband at the time, and he was going through issues with his wife, and we kind of bonded over our failed marriages and began talking. And yeah, that's how we met.
Okay. So from there, how did things progress? How long did it take you to finish separating from yours and for he to separate from his wife and you guys getting together?
Yeah. So I had already moved out and was starting divorce process. We weren't officially divorced yet with my first husband, but he was still living with his second wife and led me to believe that things were more further along in the separation than they were. And it wasn't until a year later that they actually separated. And so we dated in secret for a year, and not proud of that by any means. In my defense, I was 19 and very gullible, and I truly believed that he was on his way out, but that it still took a year for that to happen.
And so after he finally separated from his wife, when did you guys officially start dating or getting engaged?
Pretty much right away, I wanted to like go public because we'd been dating in secret for a year. It wasn't a new relationship. He was much more timid. Mm-hmm. He had just got out of a marriage. He didn't want anybody to think that he was doing anything inappropriate or anything. But I kind of pushed things a little bit, and we started publicly dating shortly thereafter. That was probably September of, like, I want to say 2007-ish. And we moved in together in the summer of 2008. We bought a townhouse together and moved in. And so we didn't actually live together prior to buying a house together, but we were at that point, we'd been dating a while. And, you know, in 2008, I'm 21. So I'm still pretty young. He's 30 at this point. And so, you know, marriage really wasn't on the table again. He had been married twice. I had been married once. We were just having fun living together, trying to enjoy our lives. But then I got pregnant. And so the reason we ended up getting engaged was because I got pregnant with my now oldest child.
Mm. Did your family react to him? Like, do they like him or?
So my mom and I had a pretty trying relationship through my teenage years. And I moved out at 17 and got married to my military boyfriend at 17. And so she didn't really have a voiced opinion about him until much later, because she was just hoping to keep any relationship with me. Having an opinion about the new man I'm dating wasn't really on the table. I really looked up to him, especially at 20. I thought he was much more mature, much more stable. I found his intelligence really attractive. And, you know, I didn't really give anybody space to have a different opinion either, truthfully.
So after you found out that you were pregnant and you guys got married, what was that like? What was your first year of marriage like, being pregnant? Just
So I got pregnant in 2009. And so I was 22 years old, not trying to get pregnant, but things happen. And, you know, I was in a committed relationship. We owned a house. We both had jobs. I was like, well, I guess this is happening. We're going to do this. And he freaked out. I don't think he like really ate or slept or talked to me for like 2 weeks. He was totally panicked about having a baby. And I took it very personally, because, you know, it was happening to me. And that was a challenging, it was very challenging. And I really struggled to know what to do because, you know, this was happening. We were clearly in a committed relationship, but the relationship shifted pretty much as soon as I got pregnant. But I had still kept my first husband's last name. So I really wanted to get married. I was like, if we're going to, we're going to do this whole baby live together thing. And, you know, I want it. So I actually proposed to him while 6 months pregnant because I was tired of waiting. And he did accept. And then 6 weeks later, I had put together a wedding and we got married. And, you know, it got a little bit better in a sense that, you know, he got on board to the baby planning and, you know, he got involved in some of those things. But our relationship really did shift, especially after the baby came, because I was no longer working at the same place. I was on maternity leave and he pretty immediately stopped talking to me about anything to do with anything besides baby. And so we had previously had a big connection. We worked literally within the same department at the same company. And so we, you know, we would solve problems together. We both worked in IT and sometimes we would bring work home, but it was like a thing we did together in a sense. And that was, that was gone. And he struggled at work, said things were bad. He didn't want to bring it home, which I accepted, but I never really felt truly connected in a sense after that. And the only safe topic was the baby. That was it. And I also jumped headfirst into motherhood. I jumped headfirst into this little being. And I was a very hyper independent person. I, how dare you imply I'm ever going to stay home and, you know, not have my independence. And then you hand me an infant. And I went, wait, you want me to leave this baby with who? No, not doing that. And motherhood also hit me in a way that I didn't expect. And I really turned all of my focus from my now husband to my now baby. And we, you know, we started the beginnings of what turned into living kind of parallel lives. We both would have said things were fine because we didn't fight, but we didn't have any discussion other than child and house.
So with that, with jumping into motherhood, your relationship changing, did it ever get better before the big thing happened?
I mean, we had two more kids, so it wasn't like we weren't intimate or connected or anything like that. You know, we moved houses. We, you know, found our version of normalcy within that change. You know, were we ever the fun playful couple that we were back then? No. But you have young children. There's a lot of ways to excuse that. There's a lot of ways to say, well, this is just the season we're in. And, you know, my focus was the kids in the house and his focus was his job. His job also changed. The company was purchased. He had to travel more. He was gone a lot. He would work 12 plus hour days. And I really tried to just stay in gratitude of the fact that he made money and meant that I could stay home, because so many women don't have that choice. And I got to make the choice to completely quit and not go back to work. And I couldn't imagine a world where I had to put my baby in daycare at 6 weeks or 3 months. Right. It just broke my heart to even think about that. And so every time I would get frustrated by the lack of connection or when he wouldn't come home at night or anything, he would basically, I'm doing everything I can and I'm taking care of everybody. And I would feel guilty because I wasn't financially contributing. And so we just kind of continued to operate on separate paths in a lot of ways, with the only joint thing being the kids and the household.
I can see how that would be kind of hard, especially in the time, like in 2008, there was the financial downturn. So being able to have one income supporting all of you, it would kind of, you know, be easy to turn a blind eye to some things that you might not have if times were different.
Well, exactly. And, you know, when you have a baby who is now going to be financially dependent on you, and then you have more babies that are going to be financially dependent on you. And, you know, I left the workforce at 22. And so this idea that I was going to be, I didn't have this big career to fall back on. And, you know, I let a lot go in hopes to just keep the peace. I didn't investigate things, even if I was curious or I had thoughts. I didn't go through his things. I didn't go through devices, even if I had a he's being weird thought, because what was I going to do? That's how it felt, right? I didn't feel like and we didn't fight, and he didn't, you know, he didn't hit me. He didn't, you know, he was distant and didn't show up. And now see all of the gaslighting and mental and emotional, you know, abuse that took place, because I wasn't even allowed to have my feelings either. If I tried to voice my frustrations, that's not how he intended me to feel. And so that wasn't acceptable. And there was a lot of versions of that, but I didn't know what I didn't know. And I certainly wasn't about to leave my husband and be out on my own with my three kids for something like a note. It's, you know, it's work onable. It's fixable. It's not the kids get older, right? You have all the excuses in the world.
So we are going to jump to when, I guess, everything just kind of happened. How did it go down?
Yeah. So in April of 2016, so at this point, my kids are 1, 4, and 5, almost 6. And my husband's working long hours. He's traveling at least a whole week out of every month at this point. You know, I'm 3 kids in now. So it's full on.
Right.
Everything is young children. I'm breastfeeding, baby wearing, cooking, cleaning. That's my life. And so when he was late coming home, it wasn't unusual. It wasn't unusual at all. He was supposed to meet his mom that day. It was, you know, whatever. He'll come home when he comes home. I expected to be after the kids were in bed, which was normal. He messaged me and said, "Hey, is there food?" I said, "Yep." I assumed that meant he was on his way. Another couple of hours went by. No husband. I called his mom. Oh, he left hours ago. That was my first sign that something was off, because his phone was not going straight to voicemail. But because he was notoriously late and notoriously distant and often wouldn't answer, I went, "I'm going to bed. He'll show up later. Whatever. I'm going to sleep." So I went to bed, and at 2 o'clock in the morning, I woke up and I realized he still wasn't home. I called the hospital, because this now was outside of the realm of normal. No husband. And then at 5 o'clock in the morning, at this point, it's like, okay, he's dead in a ditch somewhere. That's where my mind goes. And I'm also panicked, because again, this means I'm going to now be financially responsible for 3 children. How in the hell am I going to do that? He makes well over 6 figures. Like, I don't know. I can't do that. Like, that's where I'm freaking out.
Yeah.
So I call non-emergency dispatch. I'm like, I don't know if I can report him missing, but the hospitals don't have him and I don't know what else to do. And they say, well, let me transfer you over to the jail. If he's not there, call us back. We can help. And I said, okay, I'll call you right back. Much to my great surprise, the jail says, yes, we have him. What? What do you mean? You sure? And what's the charge? And how much to bail him out? Right? Like, I've watched enough CSI. And then they say he's been arrested for attempted human trafficking and the bond is $250,000. Shock of my life.
Wow.
Yeah. And I don't even believe it's real. Like, huh? What? I don't even know what that means. I don't know what the charge means. I don't, you know, my mind goes to shipping containers and we're in like small town Colorado. Huh? I'm super confused and there must be some mistake. That's my first thought. There's some mistake. There's some other explanation. This can't be real. And so, you know, I start Googling, I start trying to get lawyers. I start trying to figure this out because there's no way in my mind that this could be real.
Right.
So what? So as you're trying to like figure out, like getting lawyers, trying to figure out what happened.
Yeah.
How did you deal with, cause you still had the kids at home and he was in jail.
Yep.
Yeah. His family is around, right?
His family lives in the same town. Yep. So I call his mom that morning and I'm like, I found him. And she's, well, we have to go see him. Turns out you can't just show up at jail and ask to see somebody. Doesn't work like that. But I didn't know that. I didn't know that at the time.
No.
You know, like these are not things that I understood. And so, you know, we had to schedule time and we had to, and then I learned none of the kids can see him because of the nature of the charges. And, you know, and I talked to bail bondsman about the process to bail people out and, you know, with 10% down and a lien on the house, they are surely happy to help you out. And, you know, we did have investments, you know, he had stock when the companies were purchased. And so I started to try to figure out how I could potentially get
like liquidate it.
Yeah. Because I'm like, there's something wrong. I need to like, he doesn't belong in jail. That's the thoughts in my mind is he doesn't belong there. I have to help. That's my duty and my obligation as his wife to do that. Mm-hmm. I'm not going down the rabbit hole that I think there's no way this is real in my mind. And so I really do everything I can. I get a lawyer hired. He does finally call me and I know where you are. Don't say anything. They're listening. Like I just, you know, that's my mindset. The cops try to call me and try to talk to me. Don't talk to me. You're not helping me. You know, that's everything I can do. I'm hyper protective, hyper loyal because there must be some other explanation. That's what I believe. Mm-hmm. And eventually I do get him bonded out. He only spends two nights in jail and was able to get things liquidated in order to literally pay cash to bail him out of jail. And I get him out. And this is the first time I actually get to hear his version of events, which I needed to hear. And his version of events is very different than what he's being charged with. He starts telling me this story about how he responded to an ad. I'm like, what, huh? You know, I'm still very confused. And an ad for what? Oh, escorts. How long has that been going on? Since like forever. What? He just flippantly admits to soliciting adult escorts since forever, his entire adult life. And this is news to me. And I'm in shock. I don't have an emotional response. Yeah. I don't have a, what are you telling me? Huh? And then he starts to tell me when they offered children that he didn't think it was real. And so he had to find out if it was real so he could report them. And that was his stance. That's why he got arrested. And I'm trying to process the fact that he's admitting to cheating on me with adult escorts and that he's being charged with a crime that could put him away for a very, very long time. And the fact that I still have my kids. I have an immense amount of trauma with my own dad being out of my life since I was nine and everything that led me to do. And I have this huge belief that kids need their father in their lives and that, you know, two parent household is really important and they need a relationship and all of these things in my head. And he's admitting to something. So like, you know, I'm in my head, like he's admitting to the piece he needs to admit to. So, and he's being charged with this horrific thing. I wrap my head around this idea that I still have to support him because the only way he's going to get through this is if I support him. Like, if I don't support him, he's going to run, he's going to something, and the kids are going to lose their father. And like, all of this worst case scenario is running in my head. And I don't really know how to wrap my head around what he is admitting to, but I just shove it down. We'll look at that later. That's not our pressing problem right now.
Right.
And I go on crisis mode, basically. Just, what's next? What do we need to deal with next? Okay, you can't be home. I have to get you your things. We have to do this. Okay, we have to get the lawyer's appointments. We have to, like, I turn into just get her done. And I focus so much on what's right in front of me. I can't think, I can't feel, I can't, nothing else. Then the articles in the paper come out. Then the whole town knows. God. It's public information. So, you know, he takes leave from his job. Everybody's calling me. Everybody wants to know anything. All of a sudden my world gets small because I disable all social media. I turn I don't want to be tagged in anything. I don't want to be nothing. And I isolate from the outside world because that's scary. I don't want to be complicit in anything, but I also am trying my damnedest to support my husband through this so that he can prove his innocence. Because if he had claims that there was, you know, calls to Homeland Security and all these other things that would have shown different intent. And I'm trying to hold on to that being something. And if we make this go away, then we can go back to our lives. That's my thread of hope. And, you know, at the same time, my world is still has to continue. I still have three kids. They still have to, you know, go to preschool and kindergarten. They still have their lives. And all I do is what I have to do and what I believe is going to be in support of getting my family back together. That's my now new focus. Everything else goes away.
So what was the turning point of you just blindly believing like what he said and then separating yourself to figure out, wait, something isn't actually correct here. I need to switch gears.
Well, it wasn't until, so the story, I mean, continues. We get supervised visitation. We go through the court proceedings and in the state of Colorado, the constitutional right to parent is so strong that even the sex offenders still maintain their constitutional right to parent. And so he was actually allowed to move back into the home. There was a precedent that once he pled guilty to attempted solicitation of the minor, which was the plea deal they offered, that he had his full parental rights. He still had due probation as a sex offender, which meant no access to other children, but his own were different. Right. And so he moved back into the home, which at the time we were like, okay, we're going to, you know, go to counseling. We're going to figure this out. He's admitting to a sex addiction. People come back from those things. That's what I'm telling myself.
Right. Like,
but he lost his job. He's not allowed to work. He's now a felon. He never does jail time. He was offered a plea deal with zero jail time. And so we still have the financial issue. We have some savings still, but not forever money. And so I'm realizing I got to figure this out because I can't be reliant on him anymore to be financially supporting us. And I'm not going to make the money he made, but I got to start somewhere. I can, you know, I'm a smart person. I can learn things. And so I start looking for work. I start to go back and I eventually find a job and I go back to work in April of 2017. So almost a full year since his arrest, I go back to work. Now, this is the first time I've left my kids for more than a couple of hours ever. And that was a huge change. That was a huge change. The baby now was two, so it was easier. He was still nursing, but not in the same way that, you know, newborns do. And, you know, he can eat real food and all the things too. So it was easier to leave him, although still earlier than I had ever, you know, the other ones were in preschool and then kindergarten before they were gone from mom for that long. But because he was home and not working, the baby was actually able to stay with dad, which I was at the time grateful for because it meant I didn't have to do daycare on top of after school care. I still had to be the one to pick up and drop off the other kids because he couldn't do that.
Be with, yeah.
he couldn't be around other kids. And he had all of these, they call them safety plans that they have to write out when they do anything outside of their normal probation rules. So there was a lot of rules and restrictions around what was allowed and what wasn't. But I was trying to just be grateful for the fact that we were moving through. But what going back to work did for me was all of a sudden, like, I wasn't in the bubble anymore. I had created this world where the outside, there's nobody else. I was totally isolated. The only person who could talk to me was my husband or his family. Everybody else judged. They didn't understand. And the only safe person who I could speak to about what I was going through was my husband himself. And so what I didn't know then that I understand now is what was happening to me psychologically. I was literally bonding to the person causing the trauma so deeply that I couldn't see anything other than what they said to be true. And before he moved back into the house, we were on the phone even like 24/7, like literally on the phone. I felt like he needed to stay connected to the kids or some other, whatever reason. I didn't have thoughts that were without him right there. And so my whole world was shrunk. And when I went back to work, it was like, had a new bubble all of a sudden. And all of a sudden I was leaving this family bubble and he wasn't in my ear anymore. And I had like 8 or 9 hours that were my own thoughts. And it took some time, but eventually I created a new safe place. I created a new identity. I got to use my brain for more than mom and wife, and people liked me and I was doing well. I was like, oh, but I started to be able to look from the outside at this other bubble that existed. And I started to see how not okay it was and how manipulative things had been. And I started to realize, I started to feel this, he kept trying to pull me back in and I kept trying to push back out, and he would try to initiate intimacy. And I would just get this feeling like there were ghosts in the room and all of these other people that you were with were right here. And you looked thoughts in my head, and I would start to come home and drink half a bottle of wine before I could look at him or talk to him. I was like, this is not healthy. This is not okay. And I knew that I wasn't okay and that I needed to be the one to do something about it. And so I also found myself attracted to one of my coworkers because he was nice to me and he wasn't attached to any of these things. And when I shared what I was going through, he didn't judge me either. He saw somebody who was going through hell and was still kicking ass at work. And he like applauded me for those things. And I felt really drawn to, I was like, I have to get the hell out of here. I have to figure my stuff out. And so I told my husband that I wanted to separate. I wanted to explore a relationship and see other people. And I assumed that mean we would separate the households. And while he fought with me, he eventually was like, you do you. I did my thing. You go do yours. We'll keep the family together. So he preyed on my need to keep the kids' lives sane so that he could stay in the house. And I certainly didn't want to fight with that. I didn't want to lose my kids' parts of the time or anything like that. And you know, he continued to start to manipulate me in subtle ways. And except this time I started to see it. I started to see the love letters for what they were. I started to see where he would admit to his behaviors and then turn around and say, see, I'm apologizing. Now I deserve X, Y, Z. Like I started to see the behaviors for what they were that had been there the whole time. But because I was no longer like attached to them, I was just grossed out by them. And so I was further and further pushing myself away. But then I started to see the behaviors to the children, and I started to see the behaviors that he was manipulating them. And mommy's leaving us. And my now 3-year-old tells me, hey, mommy, are you going to go have a baby with somebody else and leave us? 3-year-olds don't come up with that stuff. Like, no. They just don't. And I started to realize how manipulative he really was. And all I needed to do was further separate. But now I was in a situation where I had supported him and he was in the house and he never left. And the only way I could get away from him was also leaving the kids. And the courts basically said he had full parental rights at that point. So there was no way to remove him. And so I'm trying to figure out, how do I go about this in a safe way? And next thing I know, he hands me divorce papers. He hands me divorce papers, and this is now October of 2018. Yes. And he hands me divorce papers, and also tries to kick me out of the house and try to say he's the primary parent because he's been the one not working. And even though the kids are in school and I should leave the household residence. And I probably hadn't ever been as mad as I had been at him until that moment, because after I supported you through all of these things, you what? But it didn't succeed. We went to court for temporary orders, and we had actually already purchased another home because we had been talking about separating eventually since I was dating, and he didn't want to move. So he was just trying to power play, and it didn't work. He got ordered to move, but because of the parental stuff, he also got ordered that he would have 50% of this during this temporary time until we finalized our final orders. And so the kids were going to be going back and forth. The way it all ended up shaking out, they were going back and forth 4 times a week, which was insanity.
Wow.
And they were young.
How does 4 times a week work?
Well, it was like, he originally, it was going to be just like evenings after school, a couple times a week. And then when it was like, no, he can't lose his overnights. And then they started to go, okay, so from Monday to Tuesday, they're with you. And then Tuesday to Thursday there. And it was literally 4 times a week is how it all shook out. And because it was a 2 hour really fast hearing. And the judge is like, if you guys want to change it, change it. But we couldn't agree. We couldn't have a conversation after that point in time. Yeah. It was literally, everything was a negotiation. Everything was a power play. And I stopped trying. I said, you know what? We're following the orders to a T. I'm not doing this. Mm-hmm. And what I saw in the kids is the behavior only got worse. They were now put through my worst fear, where they were going to be impacted by all of what was going on. My middle child especially and he's my most emotional one. He's the most empathetic one. He started to, start to have accidents at school. He started to behave even worse. And they started to get physically violent with me because dad played video game candy, all the rewards, bribery dad. And I was the boundary holder. And so they would almost be going through screen and sugar withdrawals with me and then go back over there and go get all hyped up again. And the transitions got violent. They didn't want to come to my house anymore. I was mean, all the things. And he tried to use this as ammo. See, they don't like you. See, you're not warm enough. But we had gotten a parental rights evaluator involved because I knew that this was not, it was 50-50 was not right, but I couldn't come up with something that was. Nothing felt good. And I felt so stuck because I was still running this belief that, well, they need their dad, but he's this. And I can't reconcile. Mm-hmm. And so we hired an evaluator, and she was interviewing. We did full psych evals on both of us. I was relieved to figure out that I was normal. It's always good to make sure. but he had some diagnoses. He had major depression and anxiety. He also had a personality disorder that was causing him to become dependent on myself and then now the children to meet his mental and emotional needs. And that was a lot of what was happening. And so it's one of the diagnoses that falls in the histrionic and narcissistic, but there's a group of them that dependent personality disorder is one of them. Anyhow, and so all of this is happening and things are escalating with the kids and they're getting worse and I'm getting worse and worse feelings of what is going on, but I'm in the middle of a custody dispute. Like, you can't start making new accusations. You have to follow the process. I will literally be charged with kidnapping if I don't. Hmm. And then to make matters worse, the bottom drops out again. I'm driving my kids to school. I'm literally playing a presentation in my head because I'm about to, present at work something or other. And as my older two kids get out of the car, my middle son says, "Sometimes I suck on daddy's fingers." And you can't respond. You can't say anything. You can't do anything. Have a good day at school. Because you can't make them feel bad. You can't make them feel wrong.
No. Yeah.
And my whole body was like, holy mother, what do I do now? And I call my lawyers, and you can't make new accusations in the middle of a custody dispute. Then you will be seen as the alienating parent. Mm. They say, talk to him.
What do you say?
Yes, 100%.
Okay. So it's like, in normal cases, fathers absolutely need to have rights to their children. But like, this isn't a new accusation. My child randomly said this in the car. What are we supposed to do with this?
So we had to get our ducks in a row. I talked to the child's therapist, the kid's therapist, because I had at least gotten them in therapy because they needed it. And said, make him show you. Ask him to show you what he means. So I made him show me. And it's as bad as you can picture. And so I called her back and I said, this is what he did. And she said, if he had done that in my presence, I would have been obligated to report it as a mandatory reporter.
Yes.
And then I called my lawyers and my lawyer said, okay, the therapist said that. Now you can report it. Okay. So I called Child Protective Services. I made the report. And then you just like, you know, you hand it off to the people and you wait. You don't know what happens, right? A couple days go by. I get a call from the caseworker and he wants to interview my son. I say, great, I'll meet you at the house. I pick my kid up early. Happened to be my day, so I was able to insert myself there. And I find out from my son that his dad hadn't been around and everybody was freaking out and everybody was upset because grandma picked the kids up from school. Nobody called me. Nobody said anything. I don't still know what's going on. And the caseworker comes over to my house and tries to interview my son, except he just point blank asks my child, so mom told me about the game you play with your dad. Do you still do that where you suck on his fingers? My child, he's seven. He's hiding under the table. He's terrified of this man. He's terrified of him. And he's hiding under the table while he's being questioned by CPS. I'm not joking. And I'm watching in like appalled because this is not how you interview children. Like, this is not how you play safety with the kids. And my son goes, oh, we don't do that anymore. And he's, you know, he's shrunk. He's terrified. And the guy gets up and I'm trying to talk to him. I'm like, do you know what grooming is? Do you know his history? Like, help me out here. And he says, yeah, yeah. We're going to go interview dad. We'll call you later.
I'm sorry. That's the only thing they asked?
Yes. Yes.
Oh, my God.
And then they went and interviewed dad. And apparently, because I had also notified probation and his sex offender therapist, he had voluntarily taken a new polygraph, which had apparently absolved him because later I learned what the polygraph actually asked, which was nothing of what I reported. Regardless, it had absolved him. So they and CPS was like, well, probation doesn't think it's a big deal. So we're closing the case. They dropped it.
Oh my God. But okay. Sorry. I need to go back. I meant to ask this earlier. So with the custody of you separating, but him not being allowed to go to the school, how are the children getting to school?
So I'm either driving them because we live literally next door, because we thought at one point we would be weird normal because I believed that this whole...
Oh no, I like that. It's cool.
I thought, you know, if you have an amicable separation and the kids can be around both parents, but obviously that wasn't. So I either took them, but he had eventually got to the point where he arranged a safety plan with the school. He dropped the kids off a couple blocks away and they walked. So he had his radius that he was allowed to go to.
Oh, okay.
And so he would drop them off and they would walk. With the littlest one, the teacher would meet him outside. So he kind of had set it up so he couldn't go into the school. He couldn't go to activities, but he could drop him off and they could walk. And that's, so he had sorted it out and he had his mom to help him in other cases as needed as well.
Okay. Okay. We can go back to where we were. Okay. So then they did the interview. He gets a polygraph and polygraphs aren't. Okay.
There's we can go down that rabbit hole later, but yes, probation absolved him because of a polygraph that didn't even ask the questions I reported. But I'm also now he's refusing any access to his files. So I don't even get to see the info. I just have to take everybody's word for it. And again, I can't just take my kids and go. I will be charged with kidnapping if I insert myself here. And so I'm in an impossible situation. Literally, I'm having to hand my children over four times a week to this man, knowing that things are just getting worse. And this is my rock bottom, not the arrest. Nope, that's nothing now. This is my rock bottom. And this is where I realized that I had to do something. Like, I have to change this. Somehow I've created this situation and I don't know how to undo it. And I'm in therapy at this point. I'm diagnosed with PTSD because I'm literally having panic attacks every interaction. It feels like a hostage negotiation because every time anything changes, he wants to renegotiate. He wants to talk to me. He's using access to the kids to try to control me. It's never about the best interests of them because everybody, all of the therapists, all of the specialists say less transitions, less confusions, keep things consistent. He doesn't want to do that. He just wants really access to me through them and what they're doing. So I'm in therapy talking to my therapist and she's like, as I'm leaving one day, she says, "Hey, have you ever thought about seeing a psychic?" It's like, what? Like a fortune teller? How's that going to help me? I have the lawyers, I have the evaluators, I have everybody, and she wants me to go see a psychic. Except because she's also flabbergasted by the situation. She's been in the court situations. Yeah. She knows all the people, right people are involved. She's also just as frustrated that this is the way the law is written. And she says, "No, I know one that's real." I'm like, "You know what? I'll try. Sure. Like, you got a lady, I will go see the lady," right?
At this point, anything.
Anything, right? And I go and I see her lady and you walk in, there's crystals and deities and all kinds of crazy things. And I had grown up, my mom was very spiritual. I went to a religious school, but I never attached myself to any of it. I was pretty agnostic, not atheist, but just, yeah, there's something, but I don't know what it is. And so I'm trying to stay open. Okay, how you can help me? And she starts telling me about her gifts and she sees angels like they're people and all these things. And she says, she starts telling me about this past life of mine that she's watching with my current husband at the time that I'm separating from. And, 500 years ago we were together and back then his drug of choice was alcohol versus sex at this point. And, he was physically abusive instead of, emotionally and mentally manipulative. Yeah. And so she's like drawing these parallels between this life. And she says, "This is like the loudest karmic echo," is what she called it, and that I've seen in a really long time. I'm like, okay, I don't know what that means, but okay. And then she starts telling me about this, things were okay until the kids came. And then she starts telling me, you thought you had to stay because you couldn't make it on your own without the kids. And she's like telling me this story. And it's like, she's in my head. Like, this is the things I've been telling myself the last 4 years. It's like, I'm listening. Like, all right. Mm-hmm. And then she starts to tell me that, I would get in front of the kids and I would try to protect the kids, but that he was physically abusive. And in that life, he beat me to death and he threw me down the stairs and my whole body starts like having this response. And I'm terrified because the truth is I'm terrified of the man in this existence. I felt like he was stalking me. I felt like he was pushing every button and he never hit me. He never actually did anything, but I was so scared of him. And so she was basically saying, "You need to get a handle on that fear because that's then, this is now. You need to get a handle on this fear and you need to make a choice." And I said, "I did choose." She said, "No, you didn't." And that was the moment that I had to take a really, really honest look at myself, because the truth is she was right. I hadn't chosen. I didn't want to be in the situation that I was in. I didn't want my family to be broken apart. I didn't want to be married to somebody who did these things, but I also didn't I still wanted my marriage. I still wanted my family. And I didn't want to believe, even with all of the evidence in front of me, I still didn't want to believe it was true. And there was a part of me that was still not believing it was true, because what that would mean about myself, what that would mean about my choices. And I had to take a incredibly honest look at the fact that I was still somewhere deep in the back of my mind, hoping that it was all still false, that he still was a good person and he still could be a good father. I was still holding on to that. And by doing that, I was giving energy in a lot of ways, what he was responding to and why he was trying to continue to pull me back in. And even though I was taking all these other actions and hiring all these people, part of me still didn't even want it. And I saw it at that moment. I saw what I was doing and I said, "Okay, I see it." She says, "You have to choose in this moment to be done with him for good across any lifetime. Here and now, you have to choose." And I stood up. I said, "I'm done." And she said, "H, like you mean it." I was like, "I'm done." And she says, "Okay, now I can help you." "Okay, I'm listening. What do you got?" And she tells me that more people can help me and there's more I can do and I have to keep going. Everybody knows somebody. and I have to talk to more people. I have to tell people my story. I can't hide anymore from it, because that's the other thing I had been doing. I didn't want anybody at work to know what I was going through. I didn't want people to know what was happening. She says, you have to tell people, you have to be respectful, but you have to keep asking, because there are people out there who will help you. And she says, he's fully psychological. Like he can lie and nothing will change. Like the polygraphs are useless. She believed he still had porn with him, you know, which would blow up his case. If I could try to get that avenue, you know, she was trying to give me all these different threads to pull at. But the biggest thing was I had to choose. Now, whether you believe in angels or psychics or not, that moment changed the entire trajectory of my case. I left that office determined. I will talk to anybody and everybody. I went back to work, literally back to work. And immediately somebody in my work said, you know, my uncle works for ICE. I'm going to call him. Okay. She calls him. They put me in touch with Homeland Security. I get in touch with the arresting officer and the other arresting officer. They vow to help me. They reopen the CPS case. They try to actually forensically interview my child. It doesn't go anywhere. Too much time has passed, but they're trying. I get a hold of the district attorney who unseals the case file. I finally actually see what happened back in 2016, because I didn't see it before. I got to see the text transcripts between him and the undercover agent. And I actually get to know the details of the fact that he in fact did intend to show up, did intend to go through with it. And based on what I read, it certainly wasn't the first time. I got to see all of that. I also started listening to my kids differently. I started recording all of the conversations with my children. I stopped being angry with them for their attitude and frustration, because they were going through it too. And I saw them differently, and I listened to them differently. And I started to shift my mindset to, instead of all this is happening to me, everything is happening for me and I have to keep going. If it doesn't work now, I need more evidence. It's going to. I have to believe it's going to. And so every new disclosure was new evidence. It was a new piece of information. I read books about body safety. I recorded everything, all of the disclosures that came out, because there were more. And I had now a 3-inch binder stack of evidence. And we were literally going to court. My court date was February 28th of 2020.
Damn.
And so I walk into court determined 6 weeks after this psychic meeting, literally 6 weeks after is court. And I am prepared. And I am determined, and damn it, this is going to be the fight of my life. And my lawyers were prepared, and they were amazing, and they questioned everything. They showed the incompetence of probation and all of the because they weren't holding him to their own standards either. And everything that my kid said came through me. The judge wanted to see it, and we showed it over and over again. I was able to state my case as a protective parent, not somebody trying to cause more problems, but somebody trying to be protective. Mm-hmm. That was very clear. And March 3rd, 2020 was when my divorce was finalized and the court order came through, and the judge gave him one last chance. She immediately restricted all overnights, which was huge. And she said, you have 6 weeks to comply with a pretty long list of requirements, the things he had been refusing to do. And if after those 6 weeks you file a certificate of compliance, you can have some time with your children as long as the certificate stays active. And if not, you only get supervised visitation. He did not a single one of thing on the list. And he lost all unsupervised time as of April of 2020. And obviously we know what happened to the world in March of 2020. And it felt literally like divine timing, because they were never quarantined with him. They were never overnight with him during that shenanigans. And after April of 2020, he stopped all contact. He never set up supervised visitation. He never called. He never emailed. He never sent a dime of child support. He vanished.
Oh my God.
So it ends well, but it's quite the story.
Wait, that's it? Like you've never, so you haven't heard from him since?
No, it's been over 3.5 years.
So like I don't know how I feel, but like, is he alive? Like, do you have confirmation of that?
Probably. He has to stay in the sex offender registry. Do you talk to his family? Nope. They also vanished. They also chose to step out of. So my children lost a parent. They lost a grandma. They lost aunts. They lost cousins. It's been even longer since I heard from them. And they still chose to support him through even the divorce and believe him. And so I was the bad one.
Right. Bad guy.
I was the bad guy. And you know, at this point, enough time has passed that they're strangers, all of them, to the children, because they're now 8, 11, and 13.
Wow.
That's wild.
And that's why I wrote a book.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
So I know that you said you are currently, currently married. Like
obviously, right? There's a lot of details. That I did get remarried. I got remarried in 2022.
Just over a year ago. No. Did anything come from that?
No, he left. We dated. We actually did date for a while. I got promoted and became his boss and had to cut things off. Oh. We still saw each other sometimes. He was a wonderful person. He adored me. He was never interested or ready to step into a step-parent role. And when I got full custody of the kids and the pandemic hit, it further separated us. And I eventually needed to leave Colorado. I knew I couldn't stay in that town. It's a very small town. I could never run into him. I could never run into his family. The pandemic offered some safety because nobody went anywhere for a while. But it was I was making plans to leave. And I knew that I needed to cut everything of that life off.
Mm-hmm.
So we left Colorado in 2021.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'm happy you're married. What was dating?
Oh my gosh. Well, so I didn't really.
Crazy. I'd have been like, trust nobody.
Well, and there's a trust nobody. And I'm also, I have done a ton of work around this. I have done a ton of work around understanding what part I played in attracting somebody like that. And looking back on my teenage years and my beliefs and the things that I ignored and all of that was my own things to look at and unwind. And in doing that, as well as realizing maybe there's more to this whole psychic thing, I went down a rabbit hole of trying to understand what my beliefs were and what spirituality I did align with. And I, you know, 2020, there was a lot of conspiracy theories and a lot of Facebook groups and a lot of all the things.
Yeah.
And I went down those rabbit holes because I needed to understand it all. And I found myself in communities of people seeking same things and looking for spiritual guidance. I started to want to understand how to heal from trauma. I started to want to understand the physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual body connection to trauma and that everything is connected. And I started to realize how much I already knew about all of that and what I had actually done in the middle of trauma to get out of that. And so I started taking classes. I started trying to learn energy healing modalities. I started doing all of that. And so I met my now husband actually at a workshop learning an energy healing modality. He's the only man to attend this workshop. And total synchronistic story. But the facilitator had forgotten that I was coming because I was the only one coming from the States to this workshop. And so she had forgotten about me and I had no place to stay. And the only person who didn't have a roommate was the one man. And we're now. So
love it for you. Really,
but it wasn't really a dating type situation. You know,
connecting with someone.
Well, and connecting with somebody on a spiritual level, on somebody who's working on the same things. Like I felt like I came into it with a more emotional safety than I had ever had with my ex-husband. I started to understand what that even meant in a relationship. You know, we regularly have hard conversations and we regularly talk about emotions in a way that did not exist in any previous relationship. And, you know, we both have enough intuitive development now at this point that we usually know when something is going on and we usually can hold space for each other in a different way. And, you know, no, it's not perfect by any means. And it's been a big challenge, especially for him to go from being a single guy to now being a step parent of three children who were also unwinding trauma. But, you know, I don't have to, I spent a couple of years doing it all alone in fighting to do it that way. And then being a full-time single parent in a pandemic and it has its own challenges. And so, you know, shifting now again to being remarried, it's a new opportunity to teach my boys what emotional, you know, intelligence is from a male perspective and to have support as a person. And, you know, I don't have the same fears that things are going to repeat because he's such a different person. And, you know, there's already so much established safety. You know, he had stopped, you know, most men out there watch pornography. That's That's one of the excuses that I had for all of it. He chose to stop watching it on his own 10 years ago because he went on a spiritual journey and wanted a real connection with people and wasn't ever interested in things like that. Like just small things like that, that just helped help me have a little more safety in a relationship. And yes, I still have, you know, my own abandonment wounds and I still have things that I'm working through, but I have somebody to do it with. And I don't, you know, I have support with the children in a different way. And, you know, who knows what the future brings, but I never wanted to be jaded and never wanted to turn my heart off because of something that I didn't actually do.
Yeah.
Well, Amanda, first of all, I want to say thank you so much for coming on the podcast and just opening up and sharing your story, because first of all, like, that's a story you don't commonly hear and that most people might not want the world to even hear.
It's true. And that's why I wrote the book, because I knew I wasn't the only one, but we did the research. Not a single other person has written a book like that from the wife's perspective. Nobody. And
I also want to say, I'm so proud of you. Like, I don't know you. I usually come into these podcasts like blind because I like to like kind of be like the audience stand-in to just like hear all of this. I'm so proud of the work that you've done, the work that you did to save yourself, to save your kids, and to tell the world kind of like, this is what happened. And this is like, this is a way that you can help other people protect themselves.
Yes.
Like, thank you.
Thank you.
But before we let you go, we do have one last question that we ask all of our guests. And that question
is marriage worth it?
Obviously, I have a very interesting perspective to that answer, but I'm going to say yes. And I even look back at this horrid marriage in a sense, and I would not have my three children had I not been with him in that way. I might have had one, yes, but I wouldn't have all of them. And I can't imagine a world where they don't exist. I can't wrap my head around that. And having a partner, I mean, the paper to me is irrelevant. It's the commitment you're actually asking the question about. And having a person there that is by your side, that you both are mutually agreeing to be in this commitment and choosing each other every day, that version of marriage is absolutely worth it.
Wow. And there you have it. Amanda, you can go ahead and tell our listeners where they can find your book or where they can learn more about you.
Yeah. So my book is called The Sex Trafficker's Wife. You can go to thesextraffickerswife.com and all the links to find the book on Amazon are there. I also do have a coaching and healing business, amandaquickhealing.com, where you can find other ways to work with me. My tags on social media are Amanda Quick Healing or The Sex Trafficker's Wife.
You can follow us on TikTok, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Marriage Worth It. You can also email us at marriageworthit@gmail.com.
I'm Monique.
And I'm Janelle.
And this has been
Is Marriage Worth It?